Hello and welcome to the Let's Guide podcast, the ultimate podcast for Google local guides. In the last few weeks and months, quite a few of the ways you can suggest edits on Google Maps have changed, both in terms of the processes and also the screens that are presented to local guides in the Maps app. In this episode, we will explore what exactly has changed and find out whether things have gotten better or worse. As usual, before starting, I want to point out that I'm not an official representative of Google or the Google Local Guides team. I'm just a local guide myself. Anything you hear is just my personal interpretation of things, especially in episodes like these. The recording date of this 30th episode is the middle of January 2021 and is therefore describing the situation as it is today. Should you be listening at a later date, things might obviously have changed.
Let's get started!
In the introduction, I promised to share my view on whether the recent changes to the editing processes on Maps have made things better or worse. Well, that's actually an easy question to answer. It has gotten better, much better. A number of notorious pain points have been removed, so life has become easier for the local guides that like to suggest edits. And at the same time, the risk of incorrect info landing on the map by accident has decreased. Does that mean that all pain points have been removed? Unfortunately not. Some important ones are still there, but let's keep those for some other time. In this episode, I really want to focus on what has improved. So let's have a look. The first point I want to mention is one I featured as to be expected soon in the news section a couple of episodes ago. Also, on mobile devices, you can now change the language in which you use Maps within the app itself. We first found out about the fact that this new feature was there in the daily video that local guides and colleague Connect moderator Stephen Abraham is posting on his YouTube channel. That's really a kind of daily overview of what's happening in Maps and on Local Guides Connect, the official platform for local guides. If you don't know yet, I really advise you to check out that YouTube channel from Stephen. I'll make sure to link to it in the show notes. You might be wondering why exactly this ability to change the language is important for making edits. Well, it can be helpful to check or even add the name of a place in the local language, because using the app in a language other than English will often show an additional name field for that point of interest, that place on Maps, a field where you can enter the name in the local language. Or you could get a better idea of the category, and also whether or not the right category is selected, by checking Maps in another language. To find out more about that, please listen again to episode number 9 on local language categories. By the way, it was of course already possible to use Maps in another language on mobile devices, but you had to switch the language settings of the entire phone. Now you can easily switch the language within the app, pretty much like it was already possible in the desktop version. Let me quickly explain how to do it exactly. In the Google Maps app on your phone, just click on your profile picture in the top right corner to open the menu, and then click Settings towards the bottom of that menu to open a new window where you will find the option App Language at the very top of that new menu list. And there you can just select another language from a long list. The next feature I want to discuss is really also more an extension of something which was already there, but is now available more widely. The fact that house numbers are shown on the map. You only get to see them if you zoom in to the highest possible level, and they're only shown in some countries. Local guides from Australia have told me that it was visible there. for years already, but recently I've seen them pop up in much more countries such as Germany, UK, Netherlands and the Nordics, but not in a number of other countries near those near the ones that I just mentioned, like my home country Belgium. I don't see them over here, also not in France, Spain or Italy. So the rollout of this feature is very much work in progress. The interesting thing there is that you can now clearly see which exact location on maps belongs, so to speak, to which address, allowing local guides to easily spot address locations which are not correctly placed on the map. According to the mapping guidelines on where to place a pin, and more info on that if you want in episode 11 on map markers, so the pin needs to be on top of the building. And that's also what we see in most of the countries where you can now see those house numbers. The numbers are neatly positioned on top of the buildings. So if you then see a house number somewhere in an area near you positioned in the middle of a road or at the beginning of the road, as I sometimes find them, you can then really improve the quality of the underlying map by proposing a better pin location for that address. That's really taking local guides clean the map and this project to a whole new level. And there's also an extra bonus for doing this. You don't get the usual 5 points for such an edit, but 15 points, as these edits are apparently categorized as adding a place, not as just a regular edit. You should really give it a try to see if you can find incorrectly positioned house numbers near you. Okay, moving on to the next topic, the brand new category selector. There's a new way to select the category when adding a place to maps or when suggesting an edit. Loyal listeners of the podcast know that I'm a bit obsessed with categories on maps, so to me it was a really big thing to notice that this had changed dramatically. The old situation was that the app showed you a list with 15 or so categories you could select from. Notoriously, the first item on that list was accommodation, which probably explains why this category is still so abundant on maps and sometimes used very inappropriately. The complete list of about 4,000 categories, please do check episode number 2 of the podcast for more details on that. So that complete list was accessible by typing in the name of a category or part of the name, but in quite a few cases, local guides interpreted that list of 15 as the only options they had and never realized that there was a way to access much more categories. Now, however, if you click on the category of an existing point of interest during an edit, or if you need to enter the category when adding a place, because the category field is still of one of the mandatory fields, of course, next to the name and the address of a place. So when you enter category part, a brand new screen opens and it has a search box right at the top. The box contains the text "Search more categories" and also has a magnifying glass icon in it. So it's incredibly hard now to miss the fact that you can search for categories. Underneath the search box, there's a list of themes or domains, you could say, and that's called popular categories. Some of those are food and drink, shopping, services, religion, or education. Each of the items in this list has an arrow after it, which leads to a separate list of categories belonging to that domain. Not the complete list, but let's say the most frequently used categories in that domain. Lists include at least 6 options, and in some cases up to 25 categories. And in 2 of them, there's even a sub-list. One is under food and drink, where you can access a list of restaurant categories by clicking through. And under services, you can open a separate list called medical/health services. You could, of course, wonder if the options in those lists are the best ones to be shown, and why some lists would contain more or less items than others, but I'm not going to speculate on that today. I do want to point out, without having scrutinized each list in full detail, that there is at least one improvement, or correction if you want, to be made. Under education, there is two times secondary school, one with the S in school capitalized and the other with school written in all lowercase. For now, I only want to say that there will be more, much more on the topic of improving categories soon in a new project I'm working on. More details on that, no doubt, in a future episode. Ah yes, there's one more thing I want to mention about the new method to select categories. When you now do this while making an edit to a point of interest, the moment you select a category from the list, the edit is immediately entered in the category field on the edit screen, which is one click less than it used to be. You used to have to give one more confirmation before you could move on. Now, one click less. Doesn't sound like a big deal, but if you make thousands of edits, and believe me, there are local guides doing this, then you will be really happy about such details. Okay, let's move on to the next thing and attempt to keep the coverage a bit shorter there. Opening hours. This is already a bit longer there, but it fits in the overall effort to make the editing windows into a new, more modern and equally important, consistent style. So also the way you can enter opening hours is now different than it used to be a bit longer ago. The main improvement there is that when you have entered opening times for one day of the week, the system will automatically propose the same times for the next day of the week, which is often what is exactly needed. So you type in a opening hour and a closing hour for day one. Automatically, when selecting the next day, this will be copied into that day. Anyway, I like it better than the old way that usually took longer to enter all the data. Another change to the way we can now submit edits is the way you can suggest changes to existing roads or add new roads. You can now draw or select multiple road segments, whereas in the past you needed to go through the entire process of suggesting some change to a road segment by segment, or submit new roads in, for example, a newly created block, one after the other. And that process really has several steps. So also in this case, it's an easier and definitely faster way to work because you can select multiple road segments. Highly appreciated for sure. The final improvement I want to address is the reworked list of possibilities to close or remove places on maps. This list, which you access by clicking Suggest an Edit and then select the option Close or Removed, list is now restyled in the same way as we have seen with the popular categories list. There's a title on top of the list, in this case Reason for Edit, and the list itself has an arrow next to each list item. The difference is, of course, that when you click the arrow here, you don't get a new list, but a separate page with more info about that specific reason to close or remove a place. And quite importantly, in much clearer wordings than there used to be. Let's have a look at each of them. The first one is mark as temporarily closed. The exact wording, the text is, you're suggesting that maps show, and then the name of the place of is entered, show as temporarily closed. But it then continues, places shouldn't be marked as temporarily closed if they still offer online or at-home services, which is, of course, interesting information. And then underneath, there's an option to add photos. The text says, useful photos include the shopfront, notices, or signs. So you can submit pictures as evidence of the edit you suggest. The second one is mark as permanently closed. You're suggesting that maps show, enter the place name again, as permanently closed. And once again, places shouldn't be marked as permanently closed if they still offer online or at-home services, with, once again, the option to add photos. This photo adding option is there on most of the list items, so I won't repeat it each time. Next in the list is a really interesting one. This place doesn't exist here. You're suggesting that maps remove a place because it isn't real, doesn't exist here, or never existed. And this is really interesting if you ask me, and more specific than it ever was before. All previous texts for this reason to remove a place seemed to limit it to one scenario, but now it is made clear that it can be either a place that never existed on that location, or a place that might still exist on maps but not there. Something I use, for example, in case a business has moved to a new location in another part of town but still has the old one on the map too. In those cases, labeling it as fake clearly is too strong of a statement. Then there is, of course, this place is a duplicate of another place. You're suggesting that maps remove a place because it appears more than once on maps, and this is the wrong location. That last addition is something I've also not seen before, and I find it interesting as Google now apparently specifically points you to the fact that the one you mark as duplicate is the one that should be removed from the map. When selecting this option, you can still get a list of other points of interest that Google thinks might be the correct location. And so they still specifically ask you to mark the right location in that list, which always also contains the option none of the above in case the AI did not find the right one. Up next is the one that can be used to report fake places or spam. Those terms fake and spam were previously used in the description of this option, but are no longer included now. The exact wording is now, this place is harmful, offensive, or misleading. You're reporting that a place was created to harm, offend, or mislead others. So also in this case, the info given by the Google Maps team is more specific about the reasons why you should pick this one. That this is really the best way to report places that are added to maps to do damage in some way or shape, which is great, of course. Three more to go. We're almost there. The following one was also rephrased quite noticeably. This place isn't open to the public. You're suggesting that maps remove a place because it is private and doesn't allow public visitors. This includes personal places with no reception desk or public entrances. Wow, that is really making it much more clear. So once again, well done, Google Maps team. The last real one is this place moved to a new location. You're suggesting that maps remove a place because it has closed this location and moved somewhere else. This option then also offers you the possibility to indicate the new address with the quite unambiguous question, do you know the new location? And also lets you select the address in a map preview. And then finally, there's others. You're suggesting that maps remove a place for some other reason. This unfortunately does not include the possibility to add some free text or so, but then again, as far as I can see, pretty much all scenarios are covered with the items in the list. I don't think I have ever used the other option as a reason to remove, or even felt I would need an other option. And in my career as local guide, I've removed quite a few places already. There's one more thing on the close or remove page, but it is under the list of options and in another layout, indicating that clicking it will start another kind of process. That is, report a legal issue. Clicking that link will lead you to a Google support site in their legal section. So this is really intended for use if you come across something which is not just an error or some outdated info on the map, but rather something that could really have legal consequences.
It's time for some news.
I really wasn't planning to do a news section in this episode, as I'm already more than 20 minutes into it, but then I noticed a very interesting article on the Android Police website. So here's a quickie. In 4 cities, New York, San Francisco, London and Tokyo, a much more detailed version of Maps is being rolled out. I will of course link to it in the show notes so you can check yourself, because there's some very nice screenshots in that article. Amongst the things added on that newer version are crosswalks, pedestrian islands, roadside vegetation, stairs, and a more accurate indication of the width of roads and paths. Definitely go check out those screenshots in the Android Police article. And that's it. That's all I have for this episode, which was episode 30, by the way. Another nice milestone to reach with the Let's Guide podcast. Being almost 2 years old now, as the first episode was published in February of 2019. Should you have questions, remarks, feedback in general, do get in touch with me, for example, by sending an email to letsguidepodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter as Local Guides Guru, on Local Guides Connect, the official platform provided by Google for the local guides. There, I'm a moderator and since a couple of weeks also guiding star, two things I'm very proud of. Just look there for me under my real name, Jan van Haver. The show notes, as always, you can find on the podcast website, which is letsguidepodcast.com. For the next episodes, which will then be the 2-year anniversary episodes, I'm planning something special, something nice, so definitely stay tuned for the Let's Guide podcast. 2021.
Game over.